On episode 202 of the podcast, Coach Sarah Stone discusses the women's game, WTA Tour coaching, mixed doubles tactics, how to choose the right coach for junior players, coaching mistakes, and much more. Enjoy.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey everyone, this is Mehrban. I hope you're doing well. I am still in Orlando at the moment. I actually had a really nice private lesson today at the USTA National Tennis Center in Orlando. So I think I'm probably going to talk about that in the next episode. But for this one, I have an interview with you, interview slash Q&A, I would say, with Coach Sarah Stone, who has been coaching for a long time. She's very experienced. She was a former professional tennis player, and she previously coached Samantha Stosur, who, as you probably know, is a three-time Grand Slam champion, under her tutelage, in fact. She's also coached five other top 100 players, and she is also the founder and CEO of the Women's Tennis Coaching Association, a fantastic nonprofit organization, and is a committee member of the International Club of Australia. So big thanks to Sarah for enlightening us and doing great work in the tennis community. And without further ado, here is our interview slash Q&A session with Coach Sarah Stone.
For you, like, what's your main, I guess, like, activities these days? Like, are you coaching, you know, mostly club level or mostly, you know, a bunch of pros, or like, what's going on there?
Taking a little time out from coaching pros. I'm not sure if I'll coach pros again, or who knows? You never know what you're going to do. I'm just coaching a couple hours for my dad. My dad has a huge business in Australia. Nice. And a couple lessons a week, doing a couple different things and looking at some different options. I mean, my time during COVID has sort of been just keep focusing on the WTCA and keep the content out there so people have got good things to refer back to and know what they're doing. And outside of that, I'm not on the court that much at the moment. It's interesting, though, because I like it that way sometimes, because you get a chance to look at what you're doing and all the other things that are around the industry. And if you're on the court all day, every day, then you miss that stuff. So right now I'm coaching a beginner lady on her fourth lesson, and she's about 35, which is fun because you look at tennis from a different perspective. And I'm coaching a 14-year-old girl, and I enjoy learning from her about all the things she goes through on a daily basis, being a teenager and what the experience that tennis is like for her, and sort of like a research project for continuing to expand the WTCA.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, lovely to especially work with, you know, players who are in the foundation stages, so to speak. So I guess I'm curious, you know, in terms of like the approach to teaching females, and let's start with, you know, maybe the junior age, like, are there any differences in the approaches that you might take or anything? Or is it uniform? How does that work?
I would say it's quite different. The relationship is imperative. Most female players, if they don't like their coach, they're just going to be done. So it's more about that dynamic with the coach. And this one particular kid that I am coaching right now, I talked to her about astrology and crystals and, you know, all the sorts of things that common interest. And I find that she just is happy being there, talking about that. She's getting better every week. Obviously, we talk about tennis, but it's much more of a relationship. And over guys just want to get out and they want to play matches and they're competitive. It's not to say that women aren't competitive at all, but I feel like it's a different way that you build a relationship with young females, and they want to a little bit more know that you're interested in things outside of the court. It's not so cut and dry. That's just my experience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I've heard from coaches that, you know, it's really key to get to know the student and, you know, to gain their trust and things like that. So it sounds like it's even more so with females. Like, is that because males, like, are they just more like mentally, like, I don't know. I don't even know how to answer, like, ask the question. Like, what, why is that, do you think?
Hi. Well, I don't know. I think it's just environmental. I think that there's this element of maybe confidence. I mean, it's a difficult age for girls, 13 to 17, and it's where you're really self-conscious about yourself and how you fit in the world and the pressure of media and all those sorts of things. So you're being bombarded by all these different things. And tennis is a sport that's quite difficult. And then women are very self-critical, sometimes perfectionists. And then if you don't have that coach that's there just propping you up and supporting you as a human being and taking you as a person first, I think we can lose a lot of girls that way. And it's different. You're dealing with different things. Girls don't just suck it up. You know, you might have to sit down and say, what's going on for you today? And they'll say, nothing, I'm fine. And then you got to ask again and say, you know, you can talk to me about it and create a safe space. That's how it's been for me. Girls want to chat. And yeah, it's just a little bit different. There's obviously physiological differences, and that's to do with, you know, also with strength and ability to cover the court and things like that. I find that it's very important to use female role models. We might want to talk a lot about how great Roger's serve is. When I listen to commentators, actually, Roger's serve during a women's match, but I've never heard commentators refer to Serena's serve during a men's match. And I think we need to try as coaches to have those female role models in our head, like know who's the best, just have a couple, refer to Serena, sir.
Oh, Sarah, sorry to interrupt you, Sarah. I think it said that you muted yourself. So you might have to touch the screen. Hey everyone, just here briefly by myself. But yeah, we're with Coach Sarah Stone from WTCA, the Women's Tennis Coaching Association, and she was a former pro player. Aha, here we go.
I can't hear you.
That's good.
What did you do?
I don't know. I didn't do anything. Oh, man. It's like a...
I don't know. It's technology. I don't know what happened on my phone. I touched the screen and that was it.
Yeah. No worries. Yeah. No, we're all good. We're back. Yeah, I apologize for the change in the, you know, the disconnection. So we were talking about, the role models.
Yeah. You got to have them in your, if you're a coach, you need to just have a couple that you can reel off, because I think naturally male coaches are quite interested in men's tennis. It's normal. And you'll have female coaches are quite interested in women's tennis. It's your own gender. And then the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, God, I love Novak's backhand, or I love the way that Rafa gets that straight arm. And it's just not relative to the girls. And so if you can talk about that and get the girls to talk about that, I think that's empowering for them.
Yeah, for sure. One forehand that I love is Jenny Brady's forehand.
It's sick.
It's explosive. Wow.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, it looks huger than a lot
Jenny
of
men. You can use Jenny on any example.
Yeah. It's really impressive. So I guess speaking with that, you know, you might even be tired of, like, you know, potentially talking about this, but like there's been this whole, you know, the WTA versus ATP forehand. And I was just wondering, you know, I've asked this of a few coaches, and a lot of them pretty much said that, you know, it didn't matter so much, you know, as long as they got the contact point, you know, all correct. So what are your thoughts on that, on the forehand comparisons, and does it matter in your opinion?
I don't like the terminology. Because it's saying that the men's forehand is better than the women's forehand. And then Jenny Brady just has a forehand. It's not an ATP forehand. It's a forehand, and it's a sick forehand. Barty has a great forehand. Hercog has a great forehand. Krunic has a great forehand. Hennen had a great forehand. These are all chest side dominant swings. And then you have Soderling, you have Fritz, you have Choric, you have Madison Keys. All break the plane and have longer backswings. So do you need to call Fritz's forehand or WTA forehand. I mean, it's on the edge of what they use that as a description. I think it's personal. Some players, I can't hit off a longer swing like that. I just can't get the same snap. But somehow some of them are able to get that, and they sort of hit a flat, they hit a more flat through the shot kind of forehand. Like Söderling was just like a pound. And if you can't get that snap off the outside, you maybe don't get the outside of the ball quite as much, and you can't create as much jump with the ball. But they're trying to play a different style of tennis. I mean, Fritz just stands there and slams them. And I'm not breaking down Fritz's forehand, but it's quite a long swing at the back, and it's pretty deadly. So I think it's just something that people try to differentiate between two styles of forehand, and they put everything in this WTA box and you put everything in the ATP box. But it's not, for the player, I don't know, if they've got a great forehand, I would leave it with a longer swing. If they don't have a great forehand and they want to create like a heavy ball to put time pressure on the player, then you can look at saying chest side if they have the coordination to do it. It's really up to the player.
Yeah. And, you know, this is kind of like a deeper than just tennis idea. But I mean, do you feel like, you know, I feel like generally, you know, people have like these sorts of egos where they want to create a group where they feel like superior in some way, you know? So I almost feel like it's kind of like they're saying like, oh, I'm a male and I have this ATP forehand. Like, you know, the females, they so like, I don't know. I feel like it's, that could be some of it. I don't know. Does that make any sense or not really?
Yeah. Well, which one do they think is better? Which one do coaches rate is better? The ATP forehand. So automatically they're saying that the women's forehand is just not as good. And we're trying to retain females in our sport. And it's pretty evident that you just take Jen as your example. Why does that have to be an ATP forehand? It's just a great forehand. It's a sick forehand. A lot of guys would like to have that forehand. Yeah. And that's it. And I don't know. I think it's lack of education and understanding that it's not empowering to, say, compare women to having a male strokes. Just got to have your own strokes and work hard. I'm just really for using female role models where you can. And there are some places, like when I worked with Sam Stosur, there wasn't an example of a forehand that looked like what we were looking for. And hers that we modeled was Carlos Moya. And it's sort of changed since then. She doesn't quite, she's got more of a like a one swing. It used to be the one and then the go, like that good prep position. But that was it at the time. That was the example and that was the style. But now there's so many good, technically good players, female players that are very athletically developed and technically advanced, that I think we can search for enough for the female players and use them for the guys too, if that's what you want to do.
Right, right. No, definitely. So I don't necessarily want to like create like cookie cutter, you know, like advice or anything, but I'm wondering like, is there a common, like common technical differences at all? Like in where, you know, like you might prefer to teach a technique to like a female player versus the male might usually have like a different way of approaching, or not really?
Okay. I would say not really. I would just look at physical strength, like muscle mass, ability, explosive power. If you've got 5'4" Alexandra Krunic, can't ask her to cover the court in two steps because Djokovic is able to do that to create time pressure or to not lose time because he's 6'3". So I just think you have to look more at the athlete, like what is their capacity? What are they able to do? And then sort of build their game around that and build their game around their personality. There's no point saying you want someone to be first strike when they like to cat and mouse and that's why they play the sport. They enjoy toying with the person. Sure, you have to be able to finish points sometimes, but you can't take the person's joy of why they even started the sport out of what they're doing. You just kind of have to work with it.
Yeah, 100%. Sarah, I'm not sure how much you teach like club level players. You know, that's a big part of the audience. I was wondering, you know, for female club level players in particular, like are there any like strategies or just like general pieces of advice that maybe when you watch them play, like you're seeing these are very common mistakes that we might want to work on to help them play better, you know, in their club level matches?
Yeah, I would say so. That a lot of, I do coach periodically or fairly often club level players.
Nice.
Women have typically, probably club players have played less sports than men. And so that athletic capacity or the skill acquisition, it becomes like the coordination of the body is a little bit more difficult. I just think it's imperative that they hit up on the ball, mostly off the forehand. I find that the forehand is a much more athletically developed sort of shot. Getting the racket head underneath the ball is a tough concept also for a lot. But keep focusing on hitting up on the ball is one. And because I don't think it's distinctly different, but they just understand that you've come from a background of not playing a plethora of sports, and then you're coming into a sport that quite, and just try to do hand eye, like even catching or bouncing the ball off the wall. Those things are going to help you with tracking the ball a lot. And they are the things I find because females have played less sports growing up.
Great tips there, Sarah. So shifting to the pro game just for a bit, what types of strategies are you finding that are, common strategies that are working in the game today versus like what are some like maybe strategies that aren't working so well in the pro game?
Well, Barty's done really well by using a slice. And sometimes it astounds me when I'm watching women's matches and nobody's used a slice for the whole match. I don't understand why, but it gets into this, it seems to get into this rhythm of, I just want to do it this way, and it's stubborn. But the slice is not really used. I don't know if it's the court craft. I don't think it's taught from a young age. But at the moment, we've got a lot of big hitters. We've got a lot better servers. I think the servers improved a lot in women's tennis. And I think we need to see a little bit more use of the slice. That will, it's a standout. I'm bewildered why it's not used as much. The drop shot is, though, quite a lot of players that pound ground strokes will do a lot of drop shots, but they won't necessarily use the slice to set up a forehand. So it's tactically something they could work on with their coaches, I guess, but we'll see. Like Serena, I've never seen her hit a slice. I know it's not her game and it's probably not going to change, but there are some players out there that could use it just as a mix up.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just curious, what are some of the things that you worked on when you were coaching professional players that you felt like really enhanced that particular player's game?
Just be on repeat. You just got to do it over and over and over and over and over. There's no substitute for those reps done correctly. So you've just got to be willing to put in the work. I mean, any club player that's playing, I'm giving a lesson to a lady once a week, and that's great. She gets a little bit better each time. But if she would go out and practice a little bit on her own, or just hit a few balls on the wall, or take a clinic where the ball's fed in, because when you're a beginner player, it's hard to get a rally with a friend. So I think take a lesson, but take a clinic so that ball is in a place where you can get the right contact point. And that's a lot to do with it. Contact point is all over the place until you've really got your eye and you've got your strokes grooved in. So you have to practice if you want to get better.
Yeah.
It's the same for the pros.
Yeah. No, for sure. I guess which player do you think right now in the women's game is like a great player to model off of for club level players who are aspiring to get better? Who's like a player you'd pick for them to try to model after, whether it's their mentality or their strategy or anything like that?
Yeah, probably Barty, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because her game is not ultra aggressive. She uses time well, but she doesn't like just rip balls. She uses the court well. And I think if you're a club player, your capacity to rotate super quickly, and it's not something you've done growing up, is going to be a little bit less. She's got a smooth service action. You want to try to keep your strokes as smooth as you can, move the ball around the court, particularly in club, because people don't track the ball well. So if you have the ability to be precise with your placement, then you're going to open up a lot of spots because people don't track the ball as well when they're club players.
And so you talked about having smooth strokes. I know it's probably a lot of work you got to put into it, but any tips on developing smooth strokes?
I would say get video footage and be very sure who you're paying to give you lessons. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of coaches out there and you'll be there for 2 years. It's the same in any industry. Maybe they don't click with you. Maybe they don't really care. It's the same as a doctor, mechanic, it doesn't matter. Make sure that you have that connection and you feel like that person cares about you, and have a look at your game and look at video footage, because it's hard for you to remember what it looked like going back.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, going back to your playing days too, what are some changes that you made throughout your career that you felt were really really elevated your game to the next level?
Playing that much. But what elevated my game? I just think experience. I mean, I'm a very, very natural athlete. I played every sport, so it actually came very easy to me, like technically very easily, because I had that athletic capability. But playing more, being in more situations, definitely never, I didn't play enough practice matches because I was too worried about losing practice matches and feeling stupid. So if I could go back to my younger self, I would say just play a lot more matches and get yourself in a situation where you feel like you enjoy the practice environment. That's probably the most critical piece, and always find a coach that really you click with. And I have a handful that I clicked with, maybe two or three, and I had a lot of different coaches. And they're very clear to me why. And they really just cared about me as a person.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's key, coach wise. So we've got a question from Becky. Hey, Becky, how are you? Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Becky.
Hi, Sarah. At what age do you teach girls topspin, serve? And then she also says boys. So maybe both, I guess.
Well, it's to do with growth, because if you get into this hyper position, it's bad for your back. So for girls, they told me it'd be probably 14, like 13, 14. I had stress fractures. I had a kick serve at 12, but nobody knew that.
Wow.
And my back wasn't fully developed. So just be careful. Make sure that they're probably pretty grown and strong. That's the advice I've had from the orthopedic surgeons.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Wow, very interesting. Wow.
Yeah, it's so repetitive. Gymnasts get it a lot. They get that hyper extension and then they get stress fractures in their lower back.
Wow, super interesting. I'm trying to think, is that like the only stroke that we have to be wary of? I'm just trying to double check, you know, as far as
I would say so.
Okay.
And also the shoulder. I mean, you can rip your bicep tendon, but as kids, I don't think that's going to happen that much. But I would say that the serve is the one that causes a lot of problems. I mean, if you don't have stability in your shoulder, you know, I had a wrist injury overuse when I was young, but it was to do with my shoulder. So I think you've got to be doing the prehab all the time.
Yeah, it's so important. Glad you brought that up. So let's see, L. Robin, I have an easier time reading the women's players versus the men on the mixed teams, i.e. where they are going to direct the balls and how they are going to hit the ball. Any suggestions?
As to not being read, maybe hold your shot a little bit longer, create a bit more space. If you're too close to the ball, realistically, you can only pull the ball across your body. And if you try to, if your space isn't good and you try to go line or off, your forehand's going to spray to the side, your backhand's going to spray to the side. So I'd say make sure you're positioning, you give yourself plenty of space. It's just a guess. Gotcha. If that's the answer to the question.
Yeah, that sounds good. How about, is there any way for her to increase her ability to read the men's players? Because I guess they seem to be harder to read for whatever reason.
Just practice with more male players, because I was saying this the other day in the lesson. I said, when I get out, and if I got out and hit with a pro today, I would hit everything late. But after a while, once I'm tracking the ball, then I would be fine. So if you make sure you hit against guys or get in some drill classes with that ball coming faster at you, you'll then process it faster, and it won't seem like you have no time to react when you're getting onto that mixed court.
Nice. Very nice. Let's see. Becky says, thank you so much. And so boys mature later than girls, so maybe later. Oh, I guess she's commenting on the boys when to teach them. Yeah. Okay. Sounds
good. I think it just depends if it's really extreme on a kick. If you're just developing like a rolling topspin, just depends how much arch or back bend there, how much they're using that back bend to get that upward action on the ball. So just be mindful of that.
Yeah, that's a great one. Jamie, hello, Jamie again. I had a lot of terrible coaches as a junior myself. My current female pro and I talk about male pros giving women bad advice, such as not breaking the plane on the forehand or not using two-handed volleys. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, seriously. Seriously. Yeah, could you expand upon more about...
You can volley two-handed and you can break the plane.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I mean... maybe talk a little bit more about like the two-handed volley. Like, why are people saying not to use it? And, you know, just any other thoughts on that?
nothing in their head. There's been probably, I could tell you, 6 to 10 world number one women's doubles players that would volley two-handed. Arantxa Sanchez would volley two-handed sometimes. Mike Bryan volleys two-handed sometimes as a reflex. I mean, you got to get the job done. If you can't keep the racket head up and it just keeps dropping and you don't have that strength and you don't have that capacity to brace properly, then you get your other hand on there. I mean, there's many Grand Slam champions that have won Grand Slams with two hands on their volleys. So I would say if it's good enough for them, let's let the aesthetics or the ego or these thoughts go away. Grand Slam champion can volley two-handed. Why can't a club player? I don't get that. I don't know why that's a thing.
Yeah, I do not either. so great to hear that. Appreciate that, Sarah. So let's see. Richard asks, what would you advise players be wary of when they are trying to copy pros or absorbing too much technical information like from YouTube or on tennis forums?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I'm trying to work on my golf swing and I try to absorb all this information from YouTube videos, and I go out there and tell myself 50 different things to do, where I go out as a coach and I would coach my level as a golfer and I would do one thing. You don't know the 50 looking on a YouTube. I would use YouTube for drill ideas and just a couple of you can brush up on what your coach is telling you. Oh, yeah, that's what it looks like. That's what my coach said. But I wouldn't exclusively use videos for teaching myself. It's too hard. It's too technical. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered the question right, but I would try to stay away from doing that too much. I mean, it's a good second resource, but everyone needs a coach or you're not going to get better.
Yeah, seriously. If you don't have one, then you
absolutely... Even if it's 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, even that, I mean, it's focused coaching. But yeah, I mean, at the very, very least, you need to videotape yourself, like you said. Still coach recommended. great stuff. Paul has another question. So, hello, I'm my daughter's tennis coach. She is 12 years old and plays USTA tournaments. It's awesome. She wants to play college level one day. What advice would you give her? Thanks.
Make sure that you have someone else involved in the coaching. I don't know how good this person is as a coach themselves. And because it's a lot of pressure. My dad coached number 7 player in the world and he was one of the best coaches in the world, but it was extremely difficult and I did not enjoy the sport because of that. Hmm. Make sure, yeah, just use your outside resources. Be the parent first. I don't think you know it all. We don't know it all. Even as coaches, get a team around you and make sure that she loves the sport. It's a difficult thing with kids. Sometimes the parents or even pros, I've coached pros that I've wanted it more than they have wanted it. So just make sure who's driving there and then spend your money accordingly. Just don't blow it out the window because you want them to be good. They've got to be invested too.
Yeah, no, such great advice. So I guess let's assume that, you know, so a female player has a coach, I guess they're maybe they're a junior, and then they're looking to hire one other person, you know, maybe the budget isn't like so expansive that they can hire like three people or whatever. So who's mm-hmm. Who's the next person that you think would be the most beneficial to hire if they could hire another person besides the coach?
Yeah, maybe a college hitting partner, guy mm-hmm. or girl. It just depends on the level of the player. You know, there's some girls that just depends on the person. I'll get a hitting partner and just someone young, even in a high level junior, pay them $20 an hour, get them out there, get that level going up. And or you can get players and play matches against your kids. And then if they beat your kid, you pay them. If they lose, then you don't. It's another system that works pretty well. Keep them motivated.
Ooh, that's, yeah, accountability. That's a real good one. I love that. That's a great one, you know, because I was like, for some reason, I assumed that maybe you were going to go in the realm of like, oh, you know, like a mental game coach or like a physio or something like that. But it sounds like it's just like getting better training partners and just playing. It was probably more beneficial, perhaps.
Yeah, it's situational, though. Like yeah. I use, you know, you've got Nathan Martin on there. I would say yeah. If you've got a tight budget, do your programming through Tennis Fitness. I think that's really useful. Mm-hmm. And they can get it covered. I mean, there's certain things you need. You don't need that much technical advice for your fitness programs. Tennis is a moving, you know, it's a moving target, moving ball. It's different.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's very true. So another follow-up from Paul. So she plays with a semi-Western grip. A coach told her to switch to Eastern because she's a girl. Is that true? I think I know the answer.
Is that person a registered coach?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would say no. Just go with what works. If they've got an Eastern naturally, grips are very hard to change. I would say be very careful trying to change people's grips. You can just destroy their whole game. Be very, very, very sure if you want to change someone's grip. And if they're over 14, I would almost forget it.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, Becky said sad. I agree. I almost didn't finish the question because of what I saw. But yeah, anyways. Good. Yeah, yeah. I also do want to educate the audience about the Women's Tennis Coaching Association, too. I just want to ask you about that. Like, I'm curious. Nice, nice. The colors are very nice.
The colors are good. We won with the colors.
Who picked the colors?
Me, actually. I nice. Saw colors that I liked, and I sent them to the designer, and we kind of worked together and fixed, she changed something a little on this A, made it look a little like a tennis ball, but we did pretty well with it. When you go with your branding, it's on here too. You got to get going from the start. You got to concentrate on what you're doing. Yeah. And yeah, it did well, but it's gone really well. We're not doing anything right now because of COVID. We like to focus a lot on live events. We did an online conference. We're looking at what we can do later in the year and doing some stuff with the USPTA and the USCA and just trying to expand the whole scope of women's tennis, both women in tennis and coaching women's tennis for men and women.
Beautiful, beautiful. And so, actually,
stay tuned.
Yeah, no, we will stay tuned, definitely. And we have some links for people to check out WTCA. So actually, I was just curious, like how did you first create or found WTCA? Like when did the idea come out?
Yeah, it just was a conversation with a friend, and I just figured I wanted to contribute to visually seeing more women in tennis in the social space. So we started with videos and just having a platform for that, that there are someone else other than Roger, Rafa and Novak. And then showing girls doing drills and then sort of thinking about the education side. How can we impact? How can we help more girls stay in the game? Can we create an environment where women coaches feel more confident? Well, to have that, you need your guys that are advocates for women, and that creates that space where they feel included. And it just kind of rolled from there and tapped into our network. Myself and Anne Grossman, the president, asked a lot of friends for a lot of favors to step up to help women's tennis. And it's been great. It's great momentum. It's kind of been a good movement across the sport. So we're really proud of what we've been able to achieve and really thankful to all the people who cared enough to join us.
Yeah, so, you know, huge kudos on the effort and the organization. I'm curious too, because you know, I'm involved in our USTA leagues in the county. So what are some strategies to help recruit and get more female players in the game?
I guess scheduling, you know, a lot of moms dealing with kids. It's still more the mom's job to take care of the kids and those after hours and things like that. I think that can be hard. Creche, childcare, those sorts of things that become a little bit more challenging, less challenging typically for men. And it's not that it's a male or female's role, but that's just the reality. Working in a creche to your programs and just finding the right times, mummy's class and little kids' class same time, just be innovative. The leagues can be a little nasty because there's this whole lack of identity outside of leagues, and then this very, it can be cutthroat, but it's not men's leagues can be cutthroat too. But I would say on the timing around kids and pickups and stuff like that, it would be just be mindful of for that.
Thanks for that. Definitely will be thinking about that. Let's see. So we got some nice comments. Look at this. Becky says, I have the pink long sleeve and Sarah's hat. Look at that.
Becky's the boss. That's why.
That's so cool. Sarah's done an exceptional job for sure. Let's see. What was I going to say? I'm curious about like your thoughts on, I don't know how much you follow like the women's tennis in the U.S., but like what are your thoughts on the players? What's that?
Daily. They're my pals.
Okay, good.
What they're doing.
Good. How impressed are you with U.S. women's tennis, you know, at the moment?
Extremely impressed. And whenever I hear this garbage about women's tennis, America doesn't have that many players. Like, just go down the list. We go from Kenin, then Serena, Jenny, Madison, Sloane, Ali Risk. I mean, Jesse Pegula, it just goes on and on. There's so much depth. Venus is still in on the list. I mean, you've just got so many great players and a lot of really great girls and great ambassadors for our sport. And America should be very proud of their female tennis players. So anyone who thinks it's not good, they got no idea. And Kathy Rinaldi's done a really great job as the leader. She's a really inspirational person. And I've been really impressed with what she's done since she's been in that top role.
Yeah. No, it's so awesome to see. At least we have some really good female players that have been doing, you know, decent, got some good talent. But let's see. Yeah, for sure. Let's see. This one's an interesting one. VJB, careful when someone plays every sport and not blame tennis when you get a stress fracture. Stress fractures happen cumulatively. Core and hip strength, flexibility, recovery matter. That's interesting. Do you have any thoughts on that? I don't know.
Not really. I mean, I just speak from what advice I've been given by orthopedic surgeons on the back. I am not a doctor. They just said, be careful. I mean, obviously, cumulative hours, you got to be mindful how many hours you can do. There's a lot of research on that. A sports hour is another hour on the body. So if you want to practice 10 hours of tennis a week, and as a kid, you at that age, you're only supposed to practice 13, that includes all sports. So that is a true statement. You just have to be careful of the load you put on the body.
Yeah, no, 100%. Let's see. Okay. Kay Lind, if playing multiple sports, at what age would you recommend just focusing on tennis? Best sport, and then the second one, I guess, is best sport to complement tennis development?
Soccer, gymnastics, and athletics. I would say athletics for me is number one as a young kid, doing all those hurdles and all of that. And or karate is pretty good too. I would not say so much basketball, but those would be my top. Yeah, gymnastics, soccer, and track. And I don't know when the time's right. I didn't focus on single sport. I did athletics right through high school. So was still doing athletics at 16 and playing for Australia and on the Junior Fed Cup team. So I don't think you have to pick, but that was my main sport, but I still did athletics at school.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great stuff. Yeah. Depends. Yeah, no, definitely depends. And I don't know, have you read this book called Range by David Epstein?
No.
It's a very good one, and I was very pleased to see. It basically talks about how a lot of people think that like specializing from a super young age is the way to go, but in actuality, a lot of the most successful people have, you know, gone through a multitude of different experiences. And then the very first chapter is, you know, it talks about Tiger versus Roger Federer, where, you know, Tiger, like, he specialized in all this, but Roger actually played a whole bunch of different sports and all that. So, and I'm actually wondering, you know, if I'm sure it's probably the case, like with some female professional players, like, I'm trying to think of any that you know that like they played a bunch of sports for a while. I mean, besides yourself.
Yeah, lots. Loads.
Okay.
I mean, that, like, Coco, Vandeweghe, I mean, these girls played different sports growing up. Not everyone. I mean, mainly you focus on tennis. Tennis is first and everything else is secondary. But most, I mean, Barty played cricket, footy, everything. Sam Stosur played, you know, these other sports, not maybe formalized, but playing other sports. We're seeing that more and more in tennis, and that's why you're seeing the level of women's tennis going up, because of that total athlete.
Yeah, so important, so important. Let's see. L. Robin, to add to Kay Lynn's comment, what is your suggested progression for a junior player? My daughter is 10.
Follow the advice of a good coach. It's too hard to say when I have no idea about what they're doing. Just monitor the training loads. And you've got to do that with an expert. I do not know the facts off the top of my head.
Gotcha,
but don't overtrain.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good one. So I know that you did touch upon this some before, but I'm just wondering, like, what are maybe like three or four things or however many you want, like, to look for in order to find a really good coach for yourself or for a student?
Someone who cares, someone who has a lot of experience, not somebody who isn't trying to tell you that you're going to be the greatest player of all time in your first lesson. And someone that you get, that you really gel with, I guess, someone that you connect with.
Mm-hmm.
I only have time to do one more question. Is that okay if we take?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No problem.
I missed a call I was supposed to be on, but this was more important.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Gosh.
It's all good.
But
you can wait.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to ask this general question, you know, you know, for female players who want to improve their game and who want to, you know, they're committed, but they're maybe like kind of stuck at the same level. They've been there for a while. What's a couple pieces of advice or one piece of advice for them to get unstuck and get to the next level?
Be a really big student of the game. Watch a lot of tennis. So you track the patterns well. And just be as athletic as possible. Challenge yourself athletically, be it like hiking, shooting baskets, whatever. Just challenge yourself in different athletic ways. And I think it will help you develop, because tennis is a very athletic sport. And typically women come from less exposure to a lot of different sports. So if you can do that for yourself, you'll be going places.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, hey, Sarah, I'm sure we'll connect again soon. And thanks a lot. It was really nice to see you. Thanks for everything you're doing.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. Congrats on all the great work.
All right. I really hope you enjoyed that episode, that interview/Q&A with Coach Sarah Stone. And again, thanks for your time, Sarah. Keep up the great work. If you enjoyed this episode, I really would appreciate it if you would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast, and you can do that in your podcast app of choice. Just feel free to hit that big, juicy subscribe button, and you'll get all the episodes immediately downloaded to your podcast and device that you use to listen to podcasts, so that you don't have to go and manually find and download the show. Very convenient for a millisecond's worth of work, I'd say. Maybe a couple seconds, I guess, if you have to open the app. But anyways, just subscribe. Would be great for the show. It would just bring it up the rankings and therefore give more visibility of the show to others, which is more important, the most important of all, more than rankings and all that jazz. Just trying to help people improve. And so I also would like to leave a quote with you, as I often do at the end of the show, pretty much every time. And this one is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And Ralph said, "Dare to live the life you have dreamed for yourself. Go forward and make your dreams come true." Very, very true. Really love this particular quote. So with that, I just want to thank you for listening to the show again. And I look forward to bringing you more content every single week. Have a great one, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. This is Mirabana Ronshad signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files Podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.